telehealth should be a service that is used to diagnose and treat a patient.
Captain Integrity Production and the law firm of Nelson Mullins presents Stark Integrity, the Stark Law and Compliance Podcast. Stark Integrity explores the world of the Stark Law and healthcare compliance with our nationally recognized Stark Law, Fraud, and Compliance attorney, Bob Wade. Bob has a national healthcare, legal, and compliance practice that focuses on the minions of the Anti-Kickback Statute, False Claims Act, and the Stark Law, including fair market value and commercial reasonableness. Although Bob is a law partner in the national law firm of Nelson Mullins, the views expressed in Stark Integrity are Bob's personal views and not the views of the firm, and they are not intended to be legal advice. Now, without further ado, I give you Captain Integrity, Bob Wade.
Welcome to Stark Integrity, the Stark Law and Compliance Podcast. My name is Bob Wade, and I am your host. Well, in my practice, I have been receiving a lot of questions regarding telehealth, and I'm assuming that a lot of you have had questions regarding telehealth. Well, I made a journey north to Alaska, and I think that's a song, North to Alaska, and I met our presenter today, that she and I are going to have a great conversation regarding telehealth and the impact on the healthcare industry. So, Christine, why don't you introduce yourself and your firm?
Well, hi, Bob. Thanks so much for having me on the show today. My name is Christine Hall, and I'm with Sterling Global Solutions. And that's Sterling with an I, like they spell it over in Scotland, right? And we are a healthcare compliance consultation firm. So we consult on everything in compliance. And most of our consultation really revolves around coding and billing. And my passion has been telehealth for a really long time. If you were in Alaska, you heard the story that I fell in love with telehealth during the Jetsons on a Saturday morning.
Jetsons. I love that show.
and from there, it spiraled. And I had the pleasure of joining the Telehealth Resource Center about 8 years ago, and way before telehealth was super cool. And then during COVID, of course, game changer, we all started using telehealth. Even, you know, some had used it before, but we were all using it by that point. And it just continues to be something that's our new normal.
Exactly. And you're located in Florida?
I am. I am down in sunny South Florida, where the weather is 83 in mid-March.
Stark contrast. When we were in Alaska, I think one of the mornings we had, 8 inches of snow. So it wasn't as cold as what I thought. But when I was up there, I kicked something off my bucket list. There was this tournament in town called the Roundy. And I actually went downtown to the start line. They do the Adirondack at the same start line that this dog race was on. So I have seen the start and finish of a dog race. So I checked that off my bucket list. So
we did too. It was pretty incredible. And I think you hit it on the head. The weather wasn't what I had expected it to be.
Yes.
It was very pleasant, actually.
Exactly. I think the Saturday we left, it got really cold. So we got out in the great time. Well, when I hear telehealth, and I'll talk to you a little bit about my three girls, they all have a phone. And obviously in the day we used to call them telephones. And so now they're cell phones. And the way that people communicate nowadays is so different that, back when I got my cell phone, I made calls. But now I communicate through people using text messages predominantly, because sometimes, like with my girls, if I call them, they don't answer. But if I text them, I get an answer right away. Or we do the face chat or FaceTime. When I think of telehealth, and I think most people think of telehealth, you think of sitting in front of a computer talking with a medical professional like a doctor. But telehealth is broader than that, isn't it?
Absolutely. So telehealth is ways of using electronic devices or electronic communication to transmit health information. And telemedicine is the modalities that we use. So So those are those two distinctions between the terms. Now, I'll tell you a secret. In our house, we decided to go on this diet. And our doctor said, well, what would be really wonderful is if you could get one of those fancy scales that has an app on it. And you can interface with our electronic medical record. And I can kind of help the entire family walk through this weight loss journey. But sounded great. Except we were all on the same app. And when my son would get on the scale, we would show his weight loss. And my husband would get on the scale and it would show his weight loss. And then I would get on the scale. And well, we went through a couple of scales. And but our provider could get that information in real time and could see how we were doing it. And even at one point, Bob, we actually decreased my husband's medications because he had lost weight, and our provider was able to see that information in real time. It's pretty interesting how telehealth is not always just that face-to-face visit that you have with a provider. Sometimes it's the scale. Or how about the smart watches? I don't know about you, but my watch is always telling me it's time to stand up. You're exactly. Almost there. You almost made it. But some of the watches can even tell you if you've gone into AFib, atrial fibrillation, heart irregularity. And some of those watches even interface with the electronic medical records of different practices and can alert a provider. That's also another wonderful telehealth communication. And then lastly, we've got programs that are reimbursed by different payers when we're using telehealth to help monitor a specific condition, like high blood pressure. We've got these smart blood pressure cuffs now that transmit each blood pressure reading to the provider's office. And on a monthly basis, those offices will monitor someone's blood pressure and be able to react in real time when someone's blood pressure is too high, alert the patient, and do those interventions before the conditions get worse.
Yes.
So lots and lots of ways that we can do telehealth.
Yeah. So we just think about any time that you're using a communication tool virtually is telehealth, when you're not in front of another person. It's another way to communicate your medical conditions or tracking your medical progress. So that's awesome.
When we were in Alaska, you remember the time difference?
Yes.
So I'm in South Florida. And we have some amazing specialists that are here in Florida. And I realized that when we were in Alaska, there's often times where there are people that are out in those regions where they're just not able to come in to see a specialist. Well, what if we were able to get them a visit with a specialist here in Florida? Well, our times are kind of off. So there's the ability to record a telehealth visit asynchronously, which means not in real time, but send that over to the provider in Florida, have them analyze that information, that visit, that data that's achieved, and then report back in time to Alaska. And then that way, because it's recorded and stored, it's not in real time. I don't know a lot of Florida doctors that are going to treat patients at 4 a.m. and vice versa. I don't know how many Alaskans would be interested in getting up at 4 a.m. to communicate with a medical provider. So lots of different ways that we use communication devices to perform medicine.
Yeah. And telehealth, the general broad category, existed way before the pandemic, right?
Yes, absolutely. But the reimbursement was the tricky part.
Yes, exactly. But the world changed in January of 2020. When COVID raised its ugly head and the traveling, going face-to-face was a problem. And so tell me about what happened during the pandemic that the government allowed, you know, with respect to telehealth.
Well, a couple of things happened. So within the Social Security Act, there is a section, the 1135 section. And basically what it says, Bob, is that during times of crisis and when we have a public health emergency that has been announced, that certain conditions of payment can be waived for a period of time in order to make sure that there is no disruption in care. And that's exactly what happened, is some of the rules that we had to get paid from those federal payers was waived, which included a patient having to live outside of a metropolitan statistical area or in a healthcare provider shortage area, HIPSA area. And it also allowed patients
to be seen at home and have those services reimbursed. And it opened the door to a lot of different providers as well, because we still had patients that needed physical therapy at that time, or they needed assessments during that time. So it opened up what could be performed or provided via telehealth and reimbursed, right? So that was really an eye opener for everyone around the country to see how big of a need we really had for telehealth services.
Yeah, it was also interesting, even with my law practice. I have a national footprint, and I had a few clients that I have not seen you face to face more than during the pandemic, because we were seeing each other on the screen and interacting, where before we were just calling each other. And so it was a faceless conversation. So I think the use of the technology helped every industry, and obviously specifically the healthcare industry.
I do a lot of work with many different specialties, but one of the specialties is dermatology. And you would think, well, dermatology, how really could you do a whole lot of that telehealth? Well, there was a particular patient who had been seen by this dermatology group for years. And every few months, patient would come in with the same unique rash, treated the same way, was a steroid cream or maybe some oral steroids, but the rash continued to come periodically. And finally, during COVID, that patient had a telehealth visit with their dermatologist, who noticed while looking over their shoulder out the window that there was a particular type of very infectious tree that was in the yard beyond the patient. So the dermatologist had to ask, how often do you trim that tree? And they could match the dates from the eruption of the rash on the dates that they trimmed the tree. And now the patient knows that's not something they should be doing. The rash didn't appear again, almost cured, right? But had they never seen outside the window, that patient would have continued to engage in that activity and would have continued to have that rash.
That is an important discovery, because even in the home environment, you're going to see a little bit of the background of the patient. Or if I'm on the virtual visit with my physician and they're asking an issue that maybe my wife knows about, then I can pull her into the conversation. It was telehealth used more by certain specialties versus others, or was it sort of all across the board during the pandemic?
It was during the public health emergency. It was pretty across the board, mostly for those follow-up visits. We saw a huge spike in access to mental health services, where patients maybe in the past, for whatever the reasons were, maybe taboo or maybe accessibility, were not able to really gain those mental health services. And the Consolidated Appropriations Act was one of the first things that made permanent changes to accessing mental health benefits through telehealth.
Yeah. Well, I have somebody who's in the Alcoholic Anonymous program. You know, they live in a rural area, and they would make it maybe to meetings once every other week because they had to drive a substantial difference. But during the pandemic, they were able to go to multiple meetings a day because they all turned virtual. So, that type of access, I think, is important for, the government and payers to understand the benefits that come about because of telehealth. So what is the appropriate use of telehealth after the public health emergency ended?
The nice thing is that this particular year, the AMA actually gave us some great guidance. I like it when it comes from the AMA because it kind of goes beyond a particular payer's requirements. Now, Medicare is usually very good about giving us information, but when the AMA comes in and gives that blanket information, it's wonderful. And they kind of explained to us that telehealth should be a service that is used to diagnose and treat a patient, that we're going to see that value in it, and gave some examples. So, for example, maybe a rheumatologist or an orthopedic who needs to manipulate the joints, maybe they wouldn't be appropriate for an initial telehealth visit. Maybe a follow-up visit to see if medication management was working or if they were able to measure a reduction of some sort. So really, they gave us some great guidance on when telehealth should happen. It shouldn't always be used for every visit. I think we were chatting as well about if the provider's only calling to give good news. Hey, your cholesterol is great. That's not really a telehealth visit where you're evaluating and managing someone, you're simply giving good news. Whereas if you were giving bad news where it's changing the course of treatment or changing the medication, then maybe that would be considered a good telehealth visit where we're evaluating the new course and laying out the new management to that patient.
Yes. And the listeners of Stark Integrity know that recently I moved from South Bend, Indiana to Nashville, Tennessee. And I was looking for a primary care physician, and the earliest that I could get into a primary care physician was 8 months out. And so the only access that I had to a primary care physician, except for going to, you know, one of these doc in the boxes, so to speak, was to have a telehealth visit with my primary care physician back in South Bend. And so, you know, but for that, I would have to drive back to South Bend in order to see him. And really it was for medication, getting the medication update, because I didn't have access to a primary care yet. So I think there's a lot of uses. But, you know, with use, also, obviously, these services are billable services, and I'm stepping into now the fraud and abuse pool. With my next question. So when you think about compliance and the risks involved with telehealth, what are some of the considerations that providers and our listeners should be thinking about?
For me, there's a couple of them that stand out. And one is consent. My mom, in the very beginning of COVID, she received her first and only telehealth visit. And she was so excited, Bob. She called me on the phone and she said, guess what? My doctor, I'm his favorite patient. He called to see how I was doing and I could see him face to face and he was genuinely concerned. And do I have all my medications? Is everything okay? And I said, Mom, I think he had a telehealth visit. No. My doctor was just checking in with me because I'm his favorite patient. Okay. Well, a few weeks later, she gets a bill in the mail and she calls and she says, yeah, it was a telehealth visit. I didn't realize that. And that was one of the concerns that the federal government had was with Medicare beneficiaries. Do they realize that this is a billable visit? Do they realize that there's going to be a financial responsibility with that? So consent is definitely something we need to make sure that we're doing, especially for that population, our Medicare population, all population, but the Medicare population where they could be confused. And the other thing is to make sure that we're using a HIPAA compliant software that allows us to communicate that information properly. So the Office of Civil Rights during the public health emergency, they kind of said, listen, we're going to go ahead and turn a blind eye to how you communicate with your patients. Please be responsible. Use a forward-facing camera until you get a HIPAA-compliant software. And then, of course, you know, you'll be using that. In the meantime, they allowed that to happen, and they even gave an extension beyond the end of the public health emergency. But we should all be using those HIPAA-compliant platforms at this time to provide telehealth services. So those are a couple of the compliance areas that I get concerned with when we talk about telehealth.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Stark Integrity, the Stark Law and Compliance podcast. If you have any questions regarding this episode, the Stark Law, or healthcare compliance, you can contact me at bobwadecaptainintegrity@gmail.com or my law firm email address at bob.wade@nelsonmullins.com. You can review this and any other episode of Stark Integrity at the Captain Integrity website at captainintegrity.com. You can also follow me on LinkedIn under Bob Wade. I hope the three Captain Integrity punch points will help you with the Stark Law and compliance. In closing, remember that integrity depends on you and me.